The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
She was a beacon of stability, her strength, her steady hand, deeply devoted to her role as queen for more than 70 years. Queen Elizabeth II, her life defined by duty and resilience. And this is what she said in 1947, still Princess Elizabeth, at just 21 years old.
I declare before you all that my whole life, whether it be long or short, shall be devoted to your service and to the service of our great imperial family to which we all belong.
Her reign spanning seven popes, 14 U.S. presidents, 15 prime ministers. Born in 1926, as a little girl, she couldn't pronounce her own name, calling herself Lilibet.
Princess Elizabeth.
She was a princess who never expected to rule. But when her uncle, King Edward VIII, gave up the throne to marry a divorced American, it was his brother, Princess Elizabeth's father, who became King George VI. And at 10 years old, Elizabeth was suddenly first in line to the throne. In a radio address during the war, still a princess, speaking directly to the country.
But in the end, all will be well, for God will care for us and give us victory and peace.
Taking a driving course at a training center is Princess Elizabeth. She has been learning to drive and maintain all types of motor vehicles.
She would volunteer during World War II as a driver and mechanic.
Wishing long life and happiness to Her Royal Highness and to her fiancé.
And after the war, she would marry Navy Lieutenant Philip Mountbatten. The world would know him as Prince Philip. In 1952, the young couple was on a royal trip to Kenya. They climbed up into a treehouse where they would spend the night. And when she came down the next morning, she was queen. Her father had died, and it was Prince Philip who told his young wife she was now the queen.
The Lord clothe you with the robe of righteousness.
Her coronation in 1953 was the first ever televised and was watched around the world, reigning over 52 Commonwealth countries, covering one-third of the world's population, while raising her four children, too. She was a constant on the world stage, the most traveled monarch in history, nearly 300 state visits, the first reigning monarch to visit Australia, China, Russia, and post-apartheid South Africa. She would entertain U.S. presidents, dancing with Gerald Ford, riding horses with Ronald Reagan, watching a ball game with George H.W. Bush, having high tea with the Clintons, attending state dinners alongside Prince Philip with President Obama and former First Lady Michelle Obama, the state dinner with former President Trump. A master of diplomacy, she would navigate the monarchy through moments of joy, of sadness, and through great challenges, too. After 73 years of marriage, she would lose her husband, Prince Philip. And this is what the Queen said about her husband back on their 50th wedding anniversary.
All too often, I fear Prince Philip has had to listen to me speaking. But he has quite simply been my strength and stay all these years.
She is survived by her four children, eight grandchildren, a dozen great-grandchildren. And tonight, we remember what she said all those years ago.
I shall not have strength to carry out this resolution alone unless you join in it with me, as I now invite you to do. I know that your support will be unfailingly given. God help me to make good my vow, and God bless all of you who are willing to share in it.
The end of an era in Britain, that's for sure. Of course, she was very old, but the longest reigning monarch ever for Britain, and she was queen when Winston Churchill was prime minister. This is a generation that's dying off. And the world, of course, is very much different today than it was when she first came to power back in 1952, or even earlier than that when she was a princess. Some touching footage there from, surprisingly, from ABC. There have been some pretty good tributes to the late Queen Elizabeth. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining us on the last show of the week. It's hard to believe as well. It's been a whirlwind week for us doing God's work. It's been a whirlwind week for the people of Britain. Earlier this week, they received news they had a new prime minister who then went out to Balmoral to receive the Queen's blessing. And then a day or two after that, the Queen dies. So it's been just a head-spinning year, really, of one major earth-shaking event after another. And hopefully, if you're a regular viewer of this program, hopefully you've been able to keep pace with these stunning events. As I say, we're happy to have you joining our audience. You can get to our live stream at our website, thetrumpet.com. Just go to thetrumpet.com/live and then tune in every weekday morning for the live show at 11 a.m. Central Time Zone of the United States. Of course, you can watch it on demand at your leisure if you go to that same page, or just check out the Trumpet Daily box on the homepage of the trumpet.com website. So, the longest reigning monarch from February of 1952 to September of 2022, 70 years on the throne. As you saw in that tribute there, she presided over 15 different prime ministers, Liz Truss being the most recent just this week, 14 U.S. presidents, what do you say, 7 popes as well. This is Max Hastings. Our debt to her is beyond any power of payment. It says, when she ascended the throne, the Commonwealth, which most of our parents still called the empire, here again, the end of an era. Just try to wrap your mind around how that things have changed so dramatically for the nations of Israel. This is primarily the United States and Britain. And keep in mind that Satan's goal here is to just blot out even the name of Israel. We've concentrated, for obvious reasons, we've concentrated a lot on Manasseh, the decline of Manasseh, the attack, the communist attack on Manasseh, but Ephraim too. These two, these brothers, for centuries dominating the world. And yet we see a very, very different world today. It says here, when she ascended the throne, the Commonwealth, which most of our parents still called the empire, loomed large in the nation's life and in that of the queen. We know how much the fading of the Commonwealth pained the queen, as surely also did the rising tensions between England and Scotland. What happened to the Commonwealth? What happened to the empire? This is a little island nation that used to rule the world, basically. Colonies all over the world. Says the integrity of the lands beneath the crown, whether at home or abroad, was something huge and very real in her eyes. Those of us who view the United Kingdom with more skepticism nonetheless felt a sympathy for the monarch, seeing so much that she had known for so long shrink before her eyes, not least the importance of her country and ours. She saw the empire shrink into little England. Her passing makes us feel the smallness of politicians and their comings and goings. The departure of a prime minister seems a mere ripple on the pond of the nation's affairs, such as we have seen take place so often in recent times. The Queen's going, by contrast, sweeps over British people in a great wave of shock, loss, uncertainty, and even fear. Another commentator wrote that Queen Elizabeth, with her death, the end of our Elizabethan era. The end of an era, it certainly is. I'll give you a few quotes from this piece as well. This is by Gavin Esler. It says, this is the end of the Elizabethan era. It is a turning point of enormous significance for the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, to give the Queen's realm its full title. For 54 countries of the British Commonwealth and the 14 Commonwealth countries, of which our Queen was also their Queen and Head of State. My father touched on this just last night in the Trumpet brief that went out. talking about those few remaining nations in the Commonwealth that are hard at work trying to sever those ties. It's breaking apart, and this pained the Queen. It says here, some of those countries, Barbados, for example, have already decided that the future British monarch will not be their head of state. Others, Jamaica and Australia most notably, may follow suit. It says here, but as the UK now enters a period of great and genuine mourning, there will also have to be a period of deep introspection. Things are not going well in Britain in the 2020s. He's certainly right about that. We have a lot to say, by the way. This book came out in 2017. This is when we told you about the new throne of David and what was wrong with the old throne, the one in Britain. And as this commentator brings out, things are just not going well for Britain in the 2020s. Why? It says here, Great Britain was formed at the end of the reign of the first Queen Elizabeth. So that's going back to the 1500s. And keep in mind, again, I'll refer you to the new throne of David, but also to the United States and Britain in prophecy. Because in this book, Mr. Armstrong talks about just the sudden rise in power of both Great Britain and the United States, going back to the early 1800s. But even before that, and my father's written about this quite a lot too, with the first Queen Elizabeth, Shakespeare, and the spread of the English language and education and culture, God was preparing the British people for the empire. And then look at the empire all through the 1800s, the 1900s, and then how it just split apart and shrunk in size following the end of World War II. But the United States, the world superpower, as I've covered even earlier this week, maintained some semblance of stability in the world order, serving as the world policeman in many ways. But it's a new world. It's a very different world than it was back in 1952. It says here, but if Great Britain began ending divisions at the close of our first Elizabethan era. So he writes about how that following the death of the first Queen Elizabeth, I think it was King James, came along and then tried to bring all of these diverse peoples, these differing peoples, brothers, you know, the Scots and so on, bring them together as one empire, unified. And so that began in the 1600s. But this Elizabethan period is noted more for its division, its bitter divisions. That's what he's bringing out here. It says, at the end of our own 21st century Elizabethan era, we are fraught with new divisions. You see, and they just keep getting worse. How much longer before Scotland wants to break away? This pained Queen Elizabeth II. Another headline from Jonathan Friedland. The Queen's death will shake this country deeply. She was a steady center amid constant flux. She's going to shake this country deeply. Donald Trump, in an interview with Nigel Farage, he talked about this shaking the world even. Listen to this exchange between Mr. Trump and Nigel Farage last night, clip 3.
Well, it is a sad day. It's sad all over the world. She was a woman that was just extraordinary, Nigel, just an extraordinary woman, a great woman. Who could be greater than what she's done? And she did it so long, so well.
What was it like? I mean, there you were, President of America, coming to Buckingham Palace, meeting the Queen, having tea with the Queen, spending time with her. I mean, what did that mean to you?
Well, we were going to spend just a short period of time, and we just got along really well, and we spent a lot more time than people thought, and it was really quite something. We just got along very well. We had a good chemistry, and then, as you remember, that evening there was a big celebration, and I sat next to the Queen, and we just talked all night long. She was incredible. She was incredible to speak to, and so sharp. Her mind was so sharp, and just to be with her was something very special.
And when you think that the first prime minister that she met was Winston Churchill, that she herself wore uniform in World War II. I mean, it's almost beyond belief, isn't it?
Well, it is. And, you know, she would stay out of controversy. And, you know, there was always controversy with the family, perhaps, but she was so brilliant. And I'll never forget, I'd say, who was your favorite president? And she'd say, why, I liked them all. I liked every one of them. I said, no, no, but who did you like the best? Well, actually, I liked them all. I said, who is your favorite prime minister? Why, I love them all. I like them all, every one of them. You know, there was just, she knew how to do it.
Thoughts. And I know that right across, I think the entirety of the English-speaking world and beyond, you know, she was this just this most extraordinary, astonishing figure. And I'm assuming that in America, there'd be a lot of talk, a lot of discussion about her, won't there?
Well, this is a world event. This is a very, very sad day. It was a day that was coming, obviously, but it's a very sad event. It's earth-shaking, actually, and beyond your country. And it's for good reason. She was a great woman, a great queen, and somebody that will be very, very sadly missed.
And he's right. He's right. It's an earth-shaking event. And she was a woman. She set a tremendous example of being a woman of class and duty and service and honor. Last night, my father's article, The End of an Era for Britain, he quoted from Melanie Phillips, who wrote last year, saying, the Queen is an irreplaceable constant in the life of the British nation. Her public appearances aren't just the exercise of her role as the symbol of the nation, as so many feel so viscerally. She is the nation. With her unrivaled sense of duty, her stoicism, and her emotional restraint, many see in the Queen the embodiment of a Briton whose cultural identity is inexorably fraying. Everything's unraveling for Great Britain, for the United States. And people like these, the old guard, they're dying off. Says here, many feel in their bones that when the Queen eventually passes, Britain will just not be the same. Despite the fact that the monarchy will continue, something of infinite value will have been lost. See, Britain just won't be the same. And if truth be told, we were telling you in 2017, just 5 years ago, but still, we told you in this book, The New Throne of David, that the royal throne in Britain, in London, it's not the same. Tomorrow's News Today, if you don't have a copy of that book, by the way, call that 800 number there at the bottom of the screen. Operators are standing by. The toll-free number, if you're in Canada, the U.S., and the Caribbean, it's 1-866-930-3024. Royal biographer Penny Jewer, she said that the Queen's death would be traumatic for Britain. My father said last night, or rather this is quoting her, it says, the Queen is such a tremendously popular figure, and during the course of her reign, so much has changed so dramatically. So much has changed. And she was pained by a lot of this change. She agonized over her own problems in her own family. To see that family so bitterly divided just in the past few years. My father says to many, the Queen represented a tie to a fading era of better morals, where the nation was stronger, its people better mannered, and infused with higher values. She served with a certain selflessness that is very rare today. She served. That was one of the mottos that she lived by. We'll get into that if we have time in the second segment. I serve. I'm here to serve the people. Where do you see a spirit of service and sacrifice in our nations today? As so many in the elite class, they want to destroy. They want to hurt. They want to serve themselves and not the others, not the ordinary people. She was different. What a rare quality of character this is today. In 2016, the BBC produced this brochure celebrating the Queen's 90th birthday. 90 glorious years was the headline. And in commenting on the death of her father, King George VI, BBC wrote this: Britain, 64 years ago, was a country almost unimaginably different in outlook, attitudes, morals, and ethos than today, to say nothing of technology. It says opinion polls into the early 1960s showed that as many as a third of respondents believed that the Queen had been chosen by God rather than by right succession from her father. I mean, that's remarkable. In the 1960s, as many as a third of the people in Britain believed she was chosen by God. They believed that God set her apart for that office. In that montage or that tribute we played at the start, they told you a little bit about the coronation back in 1953. And if you, it's the first one that was on live television. Millions and millions of people from all over the world, not just in Britain, tuning in to view this. And if you look at those coronations of old, I mean, the language, the Bible, the oaths, the oil, the throne. You can see a lot about that in the Old Testament. That's as, I mean, that again, Mr. Armstrong covers in the United States and Britain in prophecy, that that's where it all originated. That's where that throne started. That's where the stone, the old stone, that used to be underneath the chair at Westminster Abbey, but not any longer. They let that go back in the 1990s. My father goes through a lot of that history, that recent history, in the new throne of David. Let me just play for you a clip before we break. This is from that that coronation from back in 1953, clip 6.
The Queen, risen from prayer, is disrobed of her crimson robe. She goes to King Edward's chair, and four knights of the garter bring and hold over her a canopy of cloth of gold. It is the moment of the anointing, the hallowing, a moment so old, history can scarcely go deep enough to contain it. The hallowing, the sacring, the spirit cleansed, as in the East the body was anointed and made clean. The Queen anointed, blessed, and consecrated.
A ceremony so old that history can scarcely go back far enough. This is from a book called The History of the Coronation. It says, the communion service after the opening recognition ceremony changes the atmosphere of the coronation to one of devotion and deep religious significance. It'll be interesting to see how the next coronation plays out, to see if there's as much deep religious significance. Prince Charles is, I guess he's King Charles now, but he's already said he's not going to want to be the defender of the faith. He just wants to defend faith. Anything goes, basically. And, I mean, he's a radical. He's pretty radical in his political views. Here was a queen who really didn't get involved in politics, as Donald Trump brought out there in that soundbite. I like them all. I'm not gonna side with one or the other. I'm above the fray. King Charles hasn't been like that in his reign as a prince. I'm going to be fascinating to watch the next coronation and to compare this one to the one in 1953. Deep religious significance, this author says. It is from this point that the sovereign, having dedicated herself to the service of her peoples, is solemnly consecrated like a bishop for her task. Meanwhile, the choir sings as they have sung at this point in the ceremony since the earliest known English coronation service, the anthem Zadok the Priest. Why Zadok? What is it about Zadok? He's a biblical personality, a priest in the Old Testament. He was loyal to King David. If you haven't gotten the United States and Britain in prophecy, I mean, really, you need to read through and study this in order to be able to understand the revelation contained in the new throne of David. The 800 number, once again, it's 1-866-930-3024. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to email the show, you can send us a comment, td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. One third of your Bible is prophecy, and 90% of it is for our time today. This is why, when you study Bible prophecy, you often read statements like, in that day, in the last days, and at the time of the end. Biblical prophecy is what makes the Bible so relevant to today, so essential to understanding our modern world. Most people, even in the world of religion, assume that nations like Britain, America, Germany, Russia, and China are not mentioned in Bible prophecy. But if prophecy is mainly for our time today, how could the Bible ignore some of the most powerful and prominent nations of today? The key to understanding prophecy is knowing the biblical identities of modern nations. Learn about these identities in Herbert W. Armstrong's book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. In this book, you will learn about the astonishing identity of the American and British people in biblical prophecies. Request your free copy today. The United States and Britain in Prophecy.
The Trumpet Daily.
Will you, to the utmost of your power, maintain the laws of God and the true profession of the gospel?
All this I promise to do.
She goes now to the altar to confirm before God the promises which she has made. The things which I have here before promised, I will perform and keep. The Queen kisses the Bible and subscribes the oath.
The things which I have here before promised, I will perform and keep. So help me God.
And now, for the first time in the many times of this ancient ceremony, Scotland's church takes part. The moderator of the General Assembly of the Church of Scotland receives the Holy Bible from the Dean of Westminster and brings and presents it to the Queen.
Our gracious Queen, to keep your majesty ever mindful of the law and the gospel of God as the rule for the whole life and government of Christian princes, we present you with this book, the most valuable thing which the world affords.
Here is wisdom, this is the royal law, these are the lively oracles of God.
The priest there going on then to quote from Deuteronomy 18, saying, to the monarch, to the ruler, the royal ruler, you keep the law. You keep the law right beside you and study it and read from it all the days of your life. What did he say there? The most valuable thing that the world affords. The Bible. The Holy Bible. We'll watch closely and look for that kind of language in the next coronation. But whether it's in it or not, are we living in an era that really does look to the Bible for any kind of guidance, whether it's Britain or the United States? We've rejected our maker, our creator. We aren't, as Romans 1, I brought this out yesterday, I believe. We haven't retained God in our knowledge. We've rejected God. We haven't given God thanks for anything. And so he's just turned us over to worthless reasoning and thinking. and all kinds of vile and filthy sins. My father in the trumpet brief last night, he said the monarchy, rather than working to prevent the moral slide and uphold godly standards, has watched it happen and even encouraged it. The royal family, including the new king, has been caught up in terrible moral scandals. British society has suffered immeasurably as a result. With the queen gone, what will happen to the royal reputation? What role will the royal family play in Britain's future? These are questions my father asked last night in the trumpet brief. If you look back over the past 20 years, we've featured Queen Elizabeth on the cover of the trumpet three times. The first time in July of 2002. And these three together, if you just look at the quip underneath these featured articles, just reading through those three over the past 20 years tells quite a story. In the 2002 issue, we said the occasion was the Golden Jubilee weekend, extending to 3 days of robust outpouring of joyous emotion and celebration in recognition of Queen Elizabeth's 50 years on the throne as ruling monarch of Britain and its Commonwealth of Nations. It says, yet as the long weekend's celebrations unfolded, it became apparent that what was being exhibited to the world was not just a depiction of Britain's past fame and glory, it was also a witness to that nation's increasing loss of pride in its true heritage and a sad exhibition of that which has replaced it. That was from 2002. In July of 2007, we had the headline, Twilight for Britain. The United Kingdom turns 300. And the quote or the quip says, Queen Elizabeth II is the living testimony of the singular institution that bound together the greatest empire in the history of the world, the Grand British Empire. It says that institution is the royal throne of England, possessing a heritage that traces back to the time of good King David, king of ancient Israel. It says, the days when the sun never set on the British Empire have long gone. The sun, listen to this, the sun is now almost set on Britain's glorious past. Here again, the United States and Britain in prophecy. A third of your Bible is prophecy, after all. And don't you think God would have something to say about the greatest empire in history and the greatest single superpower in history? The United States and Great Britain in prophecy. The 800 number, 1-866-930-3024. The most recent cover that the Queen appeared on. This is from September of 2017. And this was quite the sobering message. Just from 5 years ago. What has happened to Britain's monarchy? We wrote, it has taken a few generations for the magnificent British Empire to fall from being the greatest empire in history, but 2017 has been unusually bad. Why? It seems the royal family itself has followed a similar course. In 1952, when Elizabeth took the throne, the British Empire was beginning its descent from world power. She has witnessed it shrink from empire to commonwealth to a less and less relevant second-rate power. Well, you heard the word shrink in one of the commentators that commented on her death last night or this morning. We were writing about this at least 5 years ago. Well, Mr. Armstrong was talking about the sun setting on the empire in the United States and Britain in prophecy. It says here, some commentators say this year may mark the beginning of the end for the monarchy. You see, it really is the end of an era. I mean, the beginning of the end was back in 2017, certainly in the spiritual sense, as the new throne of David brings out. But now the queen is gone. Now the queen is dead. The queen that was there on the throne when Winston Churchill was prime minister. In the New Throne of David book, here again, this one. By the way, those three quotes from the Trumpet magazine, if you call and order the U.S. and Britain in Prophecy, the New Throne of David, make sure that you also subscribe to the Trumpet, Tomorrow's News Today. You can get a free one-year subscription, beautiful magazine, a powerful magazine, a magazine containing a powerful message, keeping you right up to date with world events as they are prophesied to happen. That's why it's Tomorrow's News Today. But here's a couple of quotes from the New Throne of David. It says, even now, the United Kingdom is no longer... Sorry, the United Kingdom no longer has the throne of David, and Jacob's pillar stone is no longer relevant. It says there's a new stone. Think about this. If Britain no longer has the throne of David, this strongly indicates that Britain is going to go down rapidly. That's what my father was writing 5 years ago. He says, when God gave the revelation about the new stone, the royal family of Britain was displaced as the royal family of David's throne. That was a signal of terrible things to come upon Britain, as well as a sharp decline of America and Judah. See, we're all going down together. That's the sobering reality behind so many of these prophecies in your Bible. Just as sure as God brought us to positions of power and prominence in the world and just showered us with all kinds of blessings and wealth and prosperity and the power and the influence, whether from the United States or Britain, just spreading all over the world. And now you see that power diminished. Now you see the empire shrinking away. Now you see the United States torn by civil war. It says that was a signal of terrible things to come for Britain, as well as a sharp decline of America and Judah. It says it was all an indication that we would see a rapid decline in Britain's royal family, a rapid decline indeed. Melanie Phillips wrote in response to the Queen's death yesterday. She said, the death of Her Majesty the Queen, announced a short time ago, is a seismic event for the UK and a profound emotional shock that will be felt by millions. She says, it felt unthinkable that one day she would no longer be with us. We allowed ourselves to imagine that she would go on forever. Something of priceless value has been torn from us, and we feel devastated. She writes, it's not just because her reign lasted for an astonishing 70 years, the longest in the country's history. It's because she was the constant, still center of the nation, always reassuring, always a beacon of optimism, always felt to be somehow embracing all of us. It says she held the country together because of the way she effaced herself to become the quintessence of duty and selfless service to her people, a symbol of unity and true inclusion. And she goes on to say how that's what Britain needs today, more people like this. It's the end of an era. You think about this young lady, an impressive young princess, who even in her 20s was vowing, essentially, to serve as a leader, as a monarch. Listen to Princess Elizabeth. She was princess at the time. This goes back to 1947. She's just, I think, 21 years old at the time of this video address, clip 2.
As I speak to you today from Cape Town, I am 6,000 miles from the country where I was born. But I am certainly not 6,000 miles from home. Everywhere I have traveled, in these lovely lands of South Africa and Rhodesia, my parents, my sister and I, have been taken to the heart of their people and made to feel that we are just as much at home here as if we had lived among them all our lives. That is the great privilege belonging to our place in the worldwide commonwealth, that there are homes ready to welcome us in every continent of the earth. Before I am much older, I hope I shall come to know many of them. Although there is none of my father's subjects, from the oldest to the youngest, whom I do not wish to greet, I am thinking especially today of all the young men and women who were born about the same time as myself and have grown up like me in terrible and glorious years of the Second World War. Will you, the youth of the British family of nations, let me speak on my birthday as your representative? Now that we are coming to manhood and womanhood, it is surely a great joy to us all to think that we shall be able to take some of the burden off the shoulders of our elders who have fought and worked and suffered to protect our childhood. Most of you have read in the history books the proud saying of William Pitt that England had saved herself by her exertions and would save Europe by her example. But in our time, we may say that the British Empire has saved the world first and has now to save itself after the battle is won. I think that is an even finer thing than was done in the days of Pitt. And it is for us who have grown up in these years of danger and glory to see that it is accomplished in the long years of peace that we all hope stretch ahead. If we all go forward together with an unwavering faith, a high courage, and a quiet heart, we shall be able to make of this ancient commonwealth, which we all love so dearly, an even grander thing, more free, more prosperous, more happy, and a more powerful influence for good in the world than it has been in the greatest days of our forefathers. To accomplish that, we must give nothing less than the whole of ourselves. There is a motto which has been borne by many of my ancestors, a noble motto, I serve. Those words were an inspiration to many bygone heirs to the throne when they made their knightly dedication as they came to manhood. I cannot quite do as they did, but through the inventions of science, I can do what was not possible for any of them. I can make my solemn act of dedication with the whole empire listening. I should like to make that dedication now. It is very simple. I declare before you all that my whole life, whether it be long or short, shall be devoted to your service and to the service of our great imperial family to which we all belong. But I shall not have strength to carry out this resolution alone unless you join in it with me, as I now invite you to do. I know that your support will be unfailingly given. God help me to make good my vow, and God bless all of you who are willing to share in it.
Powerful words coming from a 21-year-old young lady who a few years after that became queen. And she really did serve her people for 70 years. I mean, she watched the Commonwealth shrink. And think of the love. She even brings out that in the speech and calls on the young people of Britain to help take some of the burden off of the older generation that had been through so much with two world wars. And yet look at where we are today. Look at what happened to her own family. Look at how much pain she had to experience in her own family. But to concentrate on the positives, I mean, she was certainly a woman who followed through on that vow in so many ways, certainly in her willingness to serve. Listen to Piers Morgan, the UK commentator, his reaction to her death yesterday at clip 4.
She's been on the throne 70 years. I've been alive 57 years, and I'm not a spring chicken. And she's been there my entire life. She's been there for almost all of our entire lives. And she's been this constant rock of duty and stoicism, strength, resilience, comfort when we've needed it, celebration when we've wanted it, this unifying factor, non-political, sitting above all the political fray, above social media, never gave interviews, didn't see the point, never chased celebrity, yet was the biggest celebrity of them all. Somebody revered around the world by presidents and world leaders and entertainers and, of course, ordinary people. People from all walks of life, rich, poor, black, white, didn't matter who you were or where you were from, she treated you with the same respect to treat everybody else. And as a result, she was the most beloved public figure, not just in this country, but I believe she was the most beloved public figure in the entire world.
Pretty amazing, this woman, and quite different from even other members of her family who have been chasing celebrity, fame, fortune. We discuss in The New Throne of David how that Prince Harry, in that interview with, I think it was NBC or Newsweek back in 2017, he said, yeah, none of us really want to succeed her on the throne. They've just lost love for the throne. And what does that say about the love for their nation or their commonwealth of nations or the empire? They've just abandoned their duty, their responsibilities, their commitment to serve. The Spectator wrote about Queen Elizabeth a year or two ago. It says, the Queen's own patriotism, a faith in the courage and character of her subjects, has informed her approach to her reign. Her approach has been one of service. Her daily schedule would alarm and exhaust someone half her age. Her daily schedule, she served until the end. She served her people. She was so positive. She rose above politics. She didn't get into interviews or social media. And social media, by the way, you look at some of the people reacting to her death and colonialism and all these old tired arguments. The devil's behind that sort of thing. The hatred, the contempt for all the good that the British Empire spread over all the earth. Some bad mixed in because this is not God's world. But a type, in so many ways, a type of the soon coming kingdom of God that will spread God's way, the Bible, all over the world. Jesus Christ is coming as King of Kings, as Lord of Lords. Jesus Christ established the throne of David. And it was to exist forever. That's talked about in the United States and Britain in prophecy. Read it. Understand the history. The history that's even in the coronations of British kings and queens. She was noted for her service. Let me just take you through a few scriptures here in conclusion. This is Jesus' teaching about true leadership, Christian leadership. Matthew 20 and verse 20, it says, then came to him the mother of Zebedee's children with her sons, worshiping him and desiring a certain thing of him. So these two sons of Zebedee, James, John, they come and they're kind of jockeying for position. The mother wanted them to get the two top positions underneath Christ. And he said to her, what will you? And she said, grant that these my two sons may sit the one on the right hand and the other on your left in your kingdom. That's quite a request. That's quite an audacious request. Verse 22 says, but Jesus answered and said, you know not what you ask. Are you able to drink of the cup that I shall drink of and to be baptized with the baptism that I'm baptized with? And they said unto him, we're able. Oh, yes, we're going to be able to lead. Don't you worry about us. We've got it all covered. Verse 23, and he said unto them, you shall drink indeed of my cup and be baptized with the baptism that I'm baptized with. But to sit on my right hand and on my left is not mine to give, but it shall be given to them for whom it is prepared of by my Father. See, God the Father is the one who appoints. There's no democracy in the world tomorrow. If you put it to vote, a righteous leader is not going to be in office for very long. Verse 24, it says, and when the 10 heard it, they were moved with indignation against the two brethren. They were jealous. Well, what about us? We want to be rulers as well. And listen to this. Jesus called unto them and said, you know that the princes of the Gentiles exercise dominion over them, and they that are great exercise authority upon them. But it shall not mean, in Luke's account, it says, the kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them. That's the way Gentile rulers operate. And we're seeing it in Israelite nations too. Authoritarians exercising lordship over the people, forcing their ideas on the populace. Jesus says, but it shall not be so among you, but whosoever will be great among you, let him be your minister. If you want to be great, if you want to be a true Christian leader, then be a servant. That's what the Greek word for minister means there. Be a servant. Don't try to exercise lordship. Now, to be sure, God does give servant leaders some authority. The God family government. There has to be government. There has to be government from the top down, or everything breaks down. It says in verse 27, and whosoever will be chief among you, let him be your servant. If you look at the Greek word for servant here in verse 27, according to Strong's, it means a slave. A slave, therefore, in a qualified sense of subjection or subserviency. So Christ said, if you want to do great things for God, be a servant. If you really want a top position, then be a slave. Take on a slave-like mentality. Submit to that motto, I serve. I'm making this vow today that whether I have a long reign or a short one, I am here to be a servant. I am here to be a servant leader. Verse 28, it says, even as the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister and to give his life a ransom for many. See, Jesus Christ was the greatest servant of all time. No one has ever seen this kind of servant leadership in the history of human civilization. Jesus was God in the flesh. Jesus came to show us how to be true leaders. And he taught the disciples in Matthew 20, this is the way to be a leader like me. Follow in my steps. 1 Peter 2:21. Follow the example that I set for you. I've been talking to the students this week about the importance of following the lead, God's lead, being led by the Spirit of God, Romans 8:14. He's the example, the footsteps that we follow in, 1 Peter 2:21, as I just said. God's making it very easy to understand. He's making it very practical. He's showing us the way. He didn't run off and abandon us after Christ was crucified. Jesus came back. He came back and actually made an appearance. The resurrected Jesus Christ made an appearance before the disciples and then gave them instructions. Now you wait in Jerusalem until you receive the power from on high, until you're imbued with the power of the Holy Spirit, and then be led by the Spirit of God. You see, God leads. And if we follow in that example, in those steps, then we're going to be the kind of servant leader that Jesus Christ himself was. What a perfect example. God reserves the greatest honor and the highest positions in his kingdom for those who are the greatest servants. For those whose motto is, I serve. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Don't forget to email us, send us some feedback over the weekend. TD@thetrumpet.com. We thank you for joining us on today's show. Thank you for joining us all week, and we'll see you next time.